看来我们只能靠自己了。
地球错失了最后逃命机会。
这座宫殿不是庇护所。
我觉得旁边两号或者哪辆几班女的都能。
Hi everyone and welcome to Middle Earth, your source for insight into China cultural industry. Listen on to those who are making a living by creating and distributing art or content onto the world's second biggest cultural market. I'm your host Aladin Faré, founder of China Compass Production, and apart from this podcast, if you need to find a location scouting for our next project in China or translate a film, you should reach out. Also, if you are a Chinese speaker and you don't mind my broken Chinese, don't hesitate to check my Bilibili channel Aladin Shuo Dianying, link in the podcast description. At the end of 2023, according to the data firm Sensor Tower, the application Real Short was downloaded 1 million times in Apple App Store and 3 million times in Google Play Store, with a total revenue of $8 million. This application, among others such as Dramabox, are following the same path as TikTok established years ago on the international market, doing entertaining short video of 1 minute, except that this time it would be fiction work with often 100 episodes over a minute to tell a full story. And those are called micro-series. We have actually talked about them on our episode 59 on the Middle Earth podcast. It was back in October 2021. But this time we want to talk about how those micro-series are trying to find an audience abroad. What are the kind of story being produced? What are the working conditions? And is this really successful? I think that after the way TikTok took over the world, it was an important story to follow. As we record mid-March 2024, we don't know what's going to happen to TikTok. Is it going to be banned? But I think years ago, no one could have predicted how this platform could take over content. And Chinese is not the only one in the field. You would have Indian companies such as Pocket FM or Singaporean Good Novel. So today, with me, the three guests to talk about this whole sphere. So first, Anaïs Marot, hello.
I'm a French and Australian actress. I mean, I'm a trained actress, but I've also directed a theater company. I then moved on directing some cultural organization, including like youth theaters and event management companies and so on. So I've been working all across the board. So I arrived in China in September 2023. So I got the chance to have a part in one of those short series.
Yes, the chance. We'll see more if that was really such a chance. Next to us in the Tencent meeting, but on the other side of the country in Chengdu, Jack Lee. Hello.
So I am also a theater actor and director. Also do independent films, so documentaries and short films. Before COVID, and then after COVID, after a small recovery period, I don't know how I stumbled into this world of short series, but here I am. Sorry, I am a writer right now for the short series, for these mini series that are adaptations from different online novels and other short form sources. Yeah, that are airing not just in North America and in China, but also in Europe, also in the Middle East and Africa as well.
And last but not least, so Yang Tingting, hello.
Hello everyone, I'm Yang Tingting, feel free to call me Tingting. I'm a Chinese editor at the World of Chinese, and I'm writing a story about the miniseries industry in China.
So today we'll mainly talk about the working conditions to produce the series, the stories that are actually being told, and the ecosystem around it. And as usual, we'll finish this panel conversation with a podcast usual quiz, where one of our guests will win a prize. I explain how those micro-series are, but I think before we really dive into the conversation, like, we must listen to an extract, like to a short video, just to get a sense of the pitfall of creativity that we might be talking about today. So I had a choice between Flash Marriage with My Werewolf Husband, Dark Web of Desire, Let Me Go, My Queen, but I decided to go to The Double Life of My Billionaire Husband.
So, the best.
Yeah, the best, obviously the best. There are four characters, the hero, I guess, and then she's going to talk to her dad, her stepmom, and her evil sister. But please, let's dive in.
Hey, Dad, can I borrow $50,000? Mom needs kidney dialysis and we really don't have any money.
Natalie, the thing is...
How shameless of you to come here and beg us for money.
I'll pay you guys back, I promise.
Lauren, maybe we can let her borrow the money. I mean, it's her mother that's sick.
You're still thinking about your ex-wife?
No, no.
Do I need to remind you this is your family now? George, without me, you'd have nothing.
Ah! It isn't my loser sister. Asking for money like a beggar? How pathetic.
This is a mistake.
Wait.
We'll give you the money.
What?
If you marry Sebastian Klein in my place.
My daughter is so smart. That's a good idea.
Sebastian Klein, the legitimate son of the Klein family. Isn't he in jail right now?
I mean, what a roller coaster of emotion. Like, it was really hard for me to stop. I was kind of waiting for the one moment when the story would kind of have some kind of pause, and every single second, like, you have like a new twist. I'm a huge fan now. So Jack, you've been working on those scripts, on those great stories. So can you explain what are the type of project that you worked on, and what are like the usual theme that we find onto those micro series?
I don't know about the original stories that some of the writers might try to produce, but usually it's from these websites that have online novels that you pay membership to read. You have these coins and you buy episodes that you can keep reading. And what they would do is, with the data that they have, the most popular books that are being read, they get adapted into these short series. And then they outsource writers. And what you do is you write about a 70-ish... Oh, yeah, maybe somewhere else, right? But write about like a 70-ish episode, a mini-series for them.
And usually, what are those novels about?
Oh, yes. This is the best part. If you really want to know, it's pretty much just Twilight, but just a deviation of Twilight, right? A deviation of 50 Shades of Grey, where the main character is usually a werewolf or a vampire or a billionaire boyfriend, and the girl is somewhat just a plain Jane. Most of the time, she's just a plain Jane, but somehow just gets swept up, best case scenario, by a billionaire who's also a werewolf or a billionaire who's also a vampire. And for some odd reason, as she goes through this journey with him, who is usually this immature, manipulative person, but somehow loves her, and that's what they're into. This third person is introduced, which is another man who has all these great traits, who's also who could be a famous actor who's a werewolf or whatever. But somehow, and then they have this love triangle, and they struggle between that before, by the end, the protagonist needs to make a choice between the two men.
So we just re-listened to the extract of The Double Life of My Billionaire Husband. This is something that we already talked about on our latest, on our episode 59 of the Middle Earth podcast, when we talk about micro-series. And back then, Ivy Yu, who was one of the producers on a micro-series, she was saying, like, we need to have a twist within 6 seconds. And we can see that in that extract, like, this is exactly what happened. And you have, like, twist, like, every 5 seconds.
Sort of, yes, sometimes, but so at least the ones that I've written, they don't actually have that. What they would have is at least a hook by the end of every episode.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, also one I worked in, so I have way less experience than you, but I looked on the platforms they used, and it looked like they were all about the same story, actually, and there were no werewolf involved. I mean, I really want to work on a werewolf one. But the one I worked on were really the millionaire, the young girl who's very pure and who's a bit of a victim and who's genuine, and the main woman who's going to go and kind of destroy her life. I do agree that there is a bit of a 7-second twist, which, I mean, it's that scenario at least. And it really, it made me think of those new roles, for making YouTube videos where you need to to get something different on screen every 7 seconds to keep people's brain engaged.
And yet at the same time, those platforms, they want you to stay a lot of time on it. Like right now I'm uploading for my own Zumati, I'm just part of the overall conspiracy to have short video and so on, but I talk about cinema. And on Kuaishou, for example, they ask people to, if you have to watch like 80 minutes per day, and then you would unlock some special feature, or they would give you golden coins. It's interesting that, they expect you to spend 80 minutes a day watching short video, which would be the length of a feature film. But we're kind of going off-road now. So Anna, it's like, so you worked on one of those series, which was about like billionaire and evil stepmother. What role did you had?
I had the grandmother.
Okay, you were the grandmother. Okay, Anaïs is not yet on the role of being a grandmother, but I guess.
So I went to the audition. I've been kind of pre-picked for the role of the young, innocent girl. And I went, and immediately the director was like, oh, maybe you should try Mrs. Campbell as well. because I am older than the character. And yeah, seeing other girls who were auditioning, you're like, yeah.
Now, but joke aside, what's interesting is that the high pace of the story, of the writing and the edit also find itself into the shooting process.
Yes, and I have to say, I was quite impressed. I didn't think it was like, it was not the kind of student movie experience. We had an extremely professional team with minimal material. So, you know, two good cameras, you know, two good screens to check, and one or two lights, and that was it. Like, of course, mics. But it was extremely minimal, but efficient. So we would shoot about 90 episodes in originally they planned for 8 days, but they had to replan on 10 days. The shoot was extremely broken up, so we would really shoot by venue. So all across the entire 90 episodes, you'll have like a minute shoot here, a minute shoot like in the same venue. So for actors, that can be quite challenging. I also did learn all the text, but regretted it because we would improvise text on the spot much better than using the not really well-written text. Sorry. Because you said they ask, yeah, I know, you didn't write that one, right? What I thought at the time was that they actually written the script in Chinese and use an AI to translate it because it was so poorly phrased and translated. It was extremely fast-paced, 90 episodes in 10 days at the end, very long days. We would start at like 7 o'clock until maybe technical team would stop around 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. They would take the time to do their 9 sets, but with little material and very professionally. And yeah, no real lunch break. People could have their break whenever it was they had time to do so. Maybe they did have, like if we change sets, some people are working on changing the set and others would eat, things like that. It was efficient, I have to say.
I think it was episode 7. We had one director and his producer and they talked about how they shot like a web movie for iQIYI. And that was like 1 hour and a half, but they still had like 2 weeks for roughly the same amount of minutes and a lot of internal like inside shots. So it feels like, yeah, at the end of the day, you guys are doing like the same amount of minutes, if we're being honest, and then you have even less time to compress everything.
Yeah, but they do have extremely long days. And some of the technical team were really, really tired by the end because actually, as actors, we could sometimes, you know, go home earlier. I mean, we were not at home. We were, even though some people lived in Beijing, we were still accommodated in an hotel. So we were close to set. It was in Sanhe. So we were on set. We could sleep as much as possible.
Okay, a proper boot camp. Mm. So, Jack, like regarding the creative process of writing, like what was like the production pipeline? How did that go?
It would usually be about a month. That's how much time they sort of give you. But really, it's about the actual meat of the work is about 15 days from giving you the material, which varies. It varies. So it varies from the actual novel that you have to adapt, novel in quotes, right? That you have to adapt to actually writing the script, or what they started doing now is they just have a very small chapter summary for each episode. 100 to 200 word chapter summary for each episode, and they give you 70 of those. And then you just write the script based off of that without knowing the novel, and then writing from there. And altogether, it takes about 15 to 20 days, but you can do it faster. It's the same thing. But that's pretty much the time frame for each series, for the writing process, because what you would do is you would finish the writing and then, you know, you get the edits back and then you get some of the comments back and you have to rewrite some of the things.
Yeah, I have a question for you. Do you work on one project at a time or do you have a pool of projects you have to conduct in parallel?
Right now, one at a time. But if you want to kill yourself, you can pool a bunch of projects together. You can do that because I think most people want to do that. I don't want to do that because I have other things I have to work on. But for most of the Chinese writers, especially the Chinese writers that that uses the AI for everything.
So Ting Ting, you were maybe a bit on the sideline, but you wrote like a full piece, like it's up and being reviewed here at the World of Chinese Magazine. But when you are listening to our two guests, like, because they focus more on the international market, from my understanding. But yeah, can you share anything regarding what you found?
Yeah, I think both of you have made great points on the opportunities and challenges in this industry. And I also found, like, through my research, many insiders, like this industry insiders, has given themselves the self-stigmas, like they will, actors and the script writers will face the criticism, like, you are doing this for money, not for your art. And they are accused of producing like something like cheap and brainless content. One producer based in Beijing shared with me that one of the actors he has worked before even told me to remove his name from the poster, like he is afraid of that show will affect his actor career. I don't know if you guys have the same concerns, like being working in this industry, like in this booming industry.
Before you guys answer, I just want to quickly say, I recently was at this random screening with friends in a bar, and one of my good friend, I'm not going to name, but the guy was like saying like, yeah, you have a lot of opportunities for writing Duanju micro series. And he was just like being so disdaining of it, like really saying like, I would rather be unemployed for a few months, say, try to nail my feature script or a TV series rather than ever worked on that. But then another of our friend was not really in the industry, but knows a lot about scriptwriting and storytelling. That person was like, well, I'm unemployed. I will do whatever it takes.
Yeah, especially in a difficult time of the traditional TV and film industry right now.
I think as an actor, yes, it's a big deal because I'm from the Central Academy of Drama. So 表演系, 中戏表演系. I'm from the Central Academy of Drama. So it sounds crazy, but I wouldn't do it. I know it sounds bad, but all my friends, they're either movie stars or doing bigger movies. And I'm just going to post my face on a short series. Yeah, there is stigma there. But if you have to eat, what I could do is write for it. I'm living out the stigma because I know as somebody who does theater professionally, you know, what all the colleagues, like a lot of my colleagues are these super movie stars and whatever. I can't do it. I can't show my face on the short form series. I can't.
Anais, you showed your face. How courageous of
yeah.
you. Are you regretting your decision right now?
Listen, no, and for two reasons. First, it didn't really came to my mind that it was a problem at first because I was new to China. And when I received the script, I read it and I was like, ah, no one is going to watch it, so that's fine. I actually really could not believe anyone would want to watch it. The second thing is that I think I'm not that recognizable. Like, yeah, probably I am, but not. Like, it's I've got this white wig and I'm supposed to be 70 to 90. I'm not sure exactly what they had in mind. They had discussion about it. It's unclear. I also think in the future, it could become a real art form. But like, it would take some big people from your school and a good writer.
Okay, so we talked about, like, let's say the business model of the actor and the producer. And yeah, I guess like some people, yeah, it's easier for a writer because you can always use your other name. For an actor, that's a whole other deal. But also, to be honest, like, because I feel like those scripts are really badly paid. Like, I remember one announcement on WeChat, they were paying like $3,000 for writing like a 100 episode micro series or something like $3,400. Yeah, and you know, it's just like, I mean, it really shows like how
abuse.
Yeah, but so now to move on to the business model, because we see that budget are stretched. Teams are maybe professional on doing things fast, but it doesn't mean that the quality is going to be there at the end of the day. It's adapted from really silly stories. So what is the business model of that? Like, how do the people at the end, like the production company, how do they make money? Maybe Ting Ting, you could start answering that. Like Netflix would sell subscription, they get money, and then they have enough subscription to make film and keep the catalog. Some other would just put a lot of ads. So yeah, that's my question. Like, what is the business model?
Yeah. I think after finishing this kind of product, they will put them online on this short video platforms like Douyin, Kuaishou, or something else, and then they will charge people per view. But to attract people to pay for the subscription, they will give first 10 episodes for free, and then if you want to unlock the remaining 90 episodes, you need to pay for the 1 yuan per episode, or you can pay like around 30 yuan for the remaining package. Yeah, and also maybe you can also watch the advertisement, so you can unlock the individual episode.
Me, I was having dinner a few days ago with a friend of mine who is also a scriptwriter. Yeah, he was basically explaining the business model is that you would try to convince, if you write the script, if Dramabox, Real Short, those kind of application for the international market, if they like your script, then they would give you half of the budget to shoot, and then you would need to find like another investor, like would also give you 50% of the budget, and then you get that, which is still like low. It's not a lot of money still at the end of the day. I mean, it's just like 10 days shooting with a few actors and so on, so it's not like, we're not talking like a indie film of 1 million USD or whatever. And then you go on shooting, then you upload, and then they would like put you on the platform and people will watch you, and if a lot of people watch you, then you would maybe start making money. But the platform, they're not stupid. Like, they don't want to invest. They don't want to basically give you a full minimum guarantee. The platform, they don't want to, you know, buy out the whole series. They still want the producer and the creators to take some risk.
Yeah, and you mentioned that it was only 10 days of shooting, and yeah, with extremely low salaries as well, and no image rights for actors and things like that, so they keep it so minimal.
Yeah, about image rights, so I would guess, Jack, there is no royalties, for a scriptwriter. Like, you guys are paid by the task, and that's it. On the opposite of people working in Hollywood or, you know, Europe. The more your series or your film is successful, the more your royalties you get. But for you, it's just like paid per task.
So the bigger companies definitely promise royalties. They just don't do it in reality. They don't practice it in reality. So the bigger companies definitely give royalties. They promise royalties if you can. So I don't want to name drop them too much, but Good Novel, the company, the Singaporean company that I helped write 3 scripts with, they do have a policy for royalties, but nobody's ever gotten any. There is royalties for sure, for some companies for sure. But right now, the one I'm working with, no, we specifically said no royalties. It's just a very strict, simple job. I finished the job, whatever, I don't care.
No expectations, at least.
Yeah, at least no expectation. Ting, coming back to you again. Yeah, sorry.
Yes, that's what I learned from my research before. Like, I've talked with a producer based in Guangxi. Like, she has made a miniseries back in 2020. The company just gave them like 20,000 yuan, and that's all they earn. Although they has received like over 3 million yuan in subscription fees, but that's but they only earn like 20,000 yuan.
Yeah, it's disgusting. I know.
Yeah, I was about to ask you, Ting Ting, in China, like, what's the do those micro series, like, do most of them make money or do most of them lose money? Like, who are the winner and loser?
I think some of them are make a fortune on this, but not quite a few. Like, we can see through the headlines, like, this miniseries has raked in over 20 or 30 million yuan. Like, the latest hit, I Become a Stepmother in the 90s. Like, the series has gained over 20 million yuan one day after its release, but according to my research, like, over 80% of their revenues has been used for advertisement, like, to increase their exposure on other short video platforms. So you can see there is a mini series online, available online. So I think most of them do not make much money from this. And a producer, like I mentioned before, the producer based in Beijing told me that one of 20 miniseries, they have made through last whole year that has become a hit through the whole year. And he is considering to stop the production. Also, a leader in the a founder of the mini series company called Wang Xiaoshu, he even told a tech web report back in 2023, like out of 10 dramas, only one can recover its costs, and suggested careful consideration for those who want to join this industry.
I feel it's unfortunately like across all cultural industry, whether it's like movies, going to the cinema, or trying to be a KOL, like at the end of the day, only 5% of people really make a hit, like 10-20% manage to break even and the rest just lose money. I feel it's basically the same ratio again.
With the difference that in those in this industry in general, people create an art form that they're really proud of, that they put, well, you know, I lost money on this project, but it's still something that tells something about me. You know, they're still proud of it.
I think it's the same thing. They're trying to make it into something legitimate, which they can, and they can pull more money into it. Because the people I'm working with, that's their ultimate goal, right? Is to make any sort of miniseries into an art form eventually, right? That's what they want to develop it into. It's going to take some time. I'm sure there's enough audience for that to happen, even within the art form itself, which is a very niche, erotic, sexual fantasy type style of content. They can still make something out of it eventually, I think. But to that 80% part, I feel like because I've written all these people, most of the content is terrible. So it has a lot to do with the content as well.
The one thing I still can't fathom my head around is the fact that all those TV series abroad, you know, you would have to pay. Because Anaïs, that was your case. You wanted to watch your own work at some point. You wanted to watch the episode where you were featured and it was behind the paywall. But you had to pay like $20 or something? I mean, you had to pay a lot of money for seeing like something which is not great quality, and for the same amount of money you could have 1 month subscription in Netflix.
That's right. Yeah, I don't exactly remember. I think that was €17, but all watching a lot of ads several days in a row. And I have to say, I just gave up. I didn't actually see even one scene.
I think at the end of the day, that's the one thing that really puzzled me with this international, because here on the Middle Earth podcast for this episode we really want to talk about the international market, because, you know, they were featured in the New York Times. Variety also talked about them, and I feel there is a little bit of a hype around it, and, you know, some flashy numbers are being said, like, you know, according to the MIT Technology Review, it was worth $5 billion USD in 2023, like the Duanju micro-series market in China, and that's going to spill abroad. I'm wondering if at the end of the day, those Duanju things going abroad, if it's not just a way for conning Chinese investors. Because I feel like I can really see a lot of WeChat group where people keep saying like, yeah, let's try to do this. Let's try to write English script. And I did a little bit of data reporting with William, who's our IT specialist here at the World of Chinese. So he showed me like an amazing website, data.ai. And basically I check like all those TikTok, Real Short and Drama Box, like their downloads and their revenue and their active users. And basically TikTok is like at 700 million users. And Real Short and Drama Box recently, they're just like at a couple of millions, and that's it. They still rank okay in revenue, like around top 150, but TikTok is like top 3 in revenue on both Apple and Google Play Store. I don't know, like Quibi, that I don't know if people remember. Quibi was like this short, exactly the same idea of doing like short video in fiction within 1 minute, and it had almost 6 million users, and it failed like a couple of years ago. So I'm wondering if there is not like basically a giant scam to, you know, pour money into this whole short video thing. Because at the end of the day, the platform, they don't have to invest that much and they are like the winner. And basically, they are just like GSI. Like they're just like, you know, like tondre le mouton. I don't know how to say this in English. Like they can just, you know, you would always have like poor producer trying their luck on the market. But at the end, it's the platform who decides who's going to win.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I think so. It's always like that in China. So why would it be different anywhere else?
And you put stuff out, you claim it works, you claim it works long enough so people start watching. I think the trying's a luck that way as well.
I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe at the end there is like a proper business model and ecosystem at the end of the day. But from our conversation, I can sense that it's all really, really shaky, if not slightly, Ponzi scheme at some point.
From the ground, it's exploitative for artists. And we do it for sport. We're doing for money. But, you know, we need to be clear about what it is. It's not a system that supports artists.
Yeah, and it's not even well paid.
No, that's why. It's a system that exploits the fact that people need to work.
I think some extras, like you mentioned in Hengdian, they do make a great money from this. Like an actress I've talked with, she is worked in Hangzhou, and she is she works as an ad actress, like she performed in the advertisements, but somehow she got a chance to perform in a miniseries, and she got like over 1,000 yuan per day. And according to her, some of her friends has received over 10,000 yuan per day.
No, but I think those 10,000, you know, it's always like a friend has told me, you know, this actress, she's not the actress who's being paid 10,000. She heard.
And it used to be the case for sure.
For
20,000, yeah.
For foreign actors.
20,000 for foreign actors.
I think we're mixing a bit like the two thing. And we just have to be careful.
For miniseries, I'm not sure.
Yeah. Micro series, guys. Not
micro
series. Micro series.
Is there a difference?
There is a difference.
Can you clarify?
Yes. So my miniseries are series which are only one season, which would roughly be between 5 to 10 episodes, 1 hour per episode. And micro series would be those 1 minute per episode or a couple of minutes. And I think because in China, we just go from series that have usually 50 episodes of 1 hour each. They go those massive long form. So then they just flipped the coin and then they went for 1 minute per episode because everyone was on Douyin like 5 years ago, on 3-4 years ago. And then the translation became Duanju miniseries, but according to me, it should be micro series. But we're going to cut this part out because this is way too nerdy.
Actually, no, I think that's really useful for people.
Okay. All right. Thank you. So then my question, I kind of answered a little bit. I said that I do think there is a market maybe for people who want this, really niche 50 Shade of Grey-esque content. But even though, that's one thing I forgot. Like when I looked at the comments on, you know, like a Real Short and Drama Box on Google Play and so on, you know, you see that they have millions of downloads, but they have only like 3 comments. So I think that is not a good sign that, you know, you just have so low comments. And all the comments were basically negative comments saying like, why do I have to watch a 1 minute ad for a 1 minute episode? So I do think that there is still, at the end of the day, I do hope, because this episode that I watched that was really trashy, at the end of the day, I think it's entertaining. If it's like a way of learning how to do things properly and fast, why not? But I'm just wondering, where the industry is heading. At some point, I think there's going to be consolidation. But I do know that, you know, a friend of mine, like she was just checking her company is basically firing some people, and she was checking, and they were hiring people in LA to work on Duanju. But they are only paid 30,000 yuan, which I think in LA would be like a really, really low salary. But there are things happening for sure. So I'm just wondering, how do you guys see the future? Because Anaïs, if I can already spoil the bean, like you are not seeing a lot of interesting proposition.
No. And generally, like for a foreign actor here at the moment, I generally find that there is not much meat of it. And definitely, I quickly realized that a lot of these series were going to be always the same type. Now, that format, no, I don't see a big future in it. I think it's going to, with that type of content, it's going to, I don't see how it can keep going. However, I think the format is inspiring. Like, I actually got so many ideas about what's, you know, as an artist, how you can use it to create something which is totally different, like a radical different form of narration. And that, I think that's something I wish there would be some funds invested in exploring that. And if not, if you go from the independent side, at least people who would broadcast it.
I think if this industry wants to legitimize it, they would have to pool a lot of money into actually bringing in big actors into it, just to see if it works. Because right now, it's the reason people don't love it that much, or there's stigma behind it, because nothing super legitimate has given it its due. So it's just like, oh, these third rate, fourth rate, fifth rate people, they're the ones doing it. What if somebody just decided to make a big production of it just to see if it's something that can change the industry? Maybe it'll happen. I feel like eventually somebody's going to try it.
Avant-garde idea. Avant-garde, not weird.
Right? But I don't know if there's a future, but I feel like someone is going to experiment. But in terms of short-form content, I feel like... So what's happening in China right now is a lot of people who are semi-celebrities online with their online content, they're making short-form narratives and series anyway. So it's like they're trying to make it independent anyway. That's the ultimate route anyway, right? It's to be able to work on your own time, do your own thing, do something artistic, and to make it in that format where you have a platform to compete and to show what your ideas are, right? So it just feels like they haven't pulled enough money into it to make something out of it. Right now, it just feels like rats looking for scraps. Everyone is looking for scraps because this is the new thing right now. Everybody pull in, but only the rats are doing it. Nobody big is doing it.
I would really agree with you, because I feel we had the same stories regarding all the Wanda, like those e-movies on the internet. Back in the day, everyone was thinking they were trashy and all, and now like you have big name directors starting to do those movies that would only be on platform like iQIYI and Youku and the likes. And the same thing happened with TV series in the West. Like, people were bashing TV series, and at some point, I guess, like, you end up with big name directors doing TV series. So I guess, yeah, maybe there's going to be one star. The star is going to invest in real short, like being like a invest into money summit, and then they're going to also do one short that's going to blow up the whole thing and give it legitimacy.
That's right, and it took decades, so we're just kind of baby stage right now. I agree with you, but if you want to have big names in terms of actors or in terms of directors, you need good stories.
I mean, I think the story of the double life of my billionaire husband was quite entertaining. I don't know what you're talking about. Anyway, yeah. Ting, do you have any?
I just got one thing to add on this point. Although China has put stricter regulations on this industry, like you cannot have the violent, pornographic or other elements in the miniseries, some local tourism bureau are putting money in this, like to promote local tourism through miniseries like this vertical things. So I think there will be some standardization of this industry, like from the government aspect.
I think I was also thinking about the international aspect of things, but I guess, yeah, if you have like something that works well at some point here, I mean, I do see that C-drama, Chinese drama, are getting more and more following in Southeast Asia for sure. Maybe we don't see it in Western countries, but all across Southeast Asia, like there are so many people watching C-dramas and, you know, having some following.
You make a really good point. Those ones were created for the Chinese market. Like, they were genuine stories created by Chinese people for Chinese people. I think the issue we have with those short series for the foreign markets is that they created with in mind what they think foreign market wants, and they take foreign actors who are not really actors. They put them in a set that looks like it's not in China, but it is. Like one of the scenes where breakfast and the billionaire got suddenly a bowl of noodle for breakfast and was like, well, I think you want something else.
No, but this is also why they do have shooting abroad now. We are trying also to find like local shootings in China in English, and it seems that a lot of people that I've been talking to are doing it abroad. So I think they're really trying to get the sense of authenticity, even though that means sometimes going to shoot in Romania. But
the thing about the fact that it's created based on what do they think it's good for the US or so, it's also carrying all sort of stereotypes that are not always the one the current society wants to keep carrying, you know, whether it's gender or race or money or social class. Like it's
always like rich man and poor woman,
Yeah.
And, like powerful man figure and a weak female figure.
And I've seen also some really nasty female figure, like, you know, the interesting in money woman. Interestingly enough, like, she's the clever one. The the nice one is not that clever, but she's the one who's good.
That's very good that catering to the Western market needs a Western eye as well. So a lot of these Chinese series that are being AI generated into North American content or European content, it's still skin and bones. It's still a Chinese person. It's not a Western person. So when they would need people like me instead of just people who just write Chinese scripts and only knows about China, and then you just translate the thing into English. It's wild, because when you're reading it, it's like, this is not a Western person. No, a Western person does not think this way. I know we have cultural differences. We do. They do not think this way. They do not behave this way. It's very odd. And then when you put it together and then ship it to the West for them to film, they're just like, I don't even know what this is. It's odd.
Yeah, and because also the budget is so low that I guess only people, you know, working in China, we still have like a lower average cost of life, would take on the job, and then they think AI is okay to, you know, do the translation. Because if you want to ask like even an American student being in UCLA, like, hey, do you want to write a 100-minute script for $3,000? I think they're just going to laugh at you.
I mean, that's what I'm doing right now, so... Laugh at me.
Yeah, but you're not living in LA.
Yeah, I'm not living in LA. That's good. That's the only part.
Okay, so thank you everyone for sharing all of thoughts and, you know, you're the dirty secrets of the industry. I hope I'm wrong and that, you know, there is no Ponzi scheme or anything regarding this industry, but I do think there is things that need to be straight out. And now to end the conversation, my favorite part of the show, the quiz, where we'll see who is the most knowledgeable among our guests.
Who?
So the rules are simple. I will ask a few questions. If you know the answer, you first buzz in with your name. Each correct answer will give you a point, and the person with the most points obviously wins the quiz. And the winner of the quiz will receive the latest issue of the World of Chinese magazine. So, okay, so Anaïs, you will say... Anaïs.
40. Oh, yeah.
And Jack, you will say...
Jack.
Okay. Well, I don't know. You could say... You could take the name of your favorite character that you wrote recently...
Mrs. Campbell.
Okay, so Miss Campbell on
Rashid.
There you go. Middle Eastern, right? Rashid.
So Ting Ting is not going to join the quiz because do you remember the answer? Yeah, you know all the answers anyway. Because yeah, we wrote the script together, and so she's seen the question, and also, I mean, working at the World of Chinese, do you want to win a World of Chinese magazine? I would, but
I will save for your guest.
Yeah, okay. Let's give the guest a reason for, you know, taking your time on this lovely Thursday afternoon. All right. So question number one. Let's go back to history a little bit. Well, I mean, by history, I mean internet history. So for any listeners who are under 25, maybe for you that's like a prehistoric time, can you tell me what was the name of the first short video platform that focused on short video? I mean, the famous one, obviously.
Rashid.
Yes, Jack.
Is it YouTube?
No, YouTube is a middle-length platform. No, I'm not talking like YouTube and Dailymotion, if anyone knows Dailymotion.
Is it Vine?
You didn't buzz in with your name.
Rashid?
Yes.
Is it Vine?
Yeah. Yes, it is Vine. So Vine, that was, you know, Anaïs, you could have stole the point, but you're nice. Yeah, I mean, you could do that. So Vine, that was launched in early 2013. So the rough idea was basically to make short video. At the beginning, I think the clips were only a few seconds, like 6 or 7. I mean, I do remember back in the day when we didn't have 4G, like 5G, it was just a pain to just upload those video. But the service stopped in 2017 as Instagram and YouTube basically copied their feature. And fun fact, Douyin, which later birthed to TikTok, started as Vine was about to stop. Here is the historical question. So 1 point for Jack.
I was a MySpace person.
Okay, question number two. In that industry, there is an important rule, a golden standard, something that any creators must follow when they do those, you know, really short fiction. What is that rule? What is the one rule everyone has to learn?
Anaïs.
Yes.
Pee before you start.
What?
No, it's not that.
Pee what?
Yeah, go to the toilet before the shooting starts.
No. Okay, well, I didn't mean on shooting, I meant on the whole industry in itself.
I see, because there were rarely toilets on the sets.
Shame we didn't talk about this. You guys don't know?
No, we don't.
Okay, I guess maybe Jack is going to have some help with that tips. But when we listen to the extract at the really beginning of the show of the double life of my billionaire husband, I did mention something important regarding the script.
Anaïs?
Yes, Anaïs.
Something new every 6 seconds?
Indeed, yes. There is the 6 second rules where something must happen. Like in the first thing, like in the first, when I showed you guys the first video, like every 6 to 7 seconds, like there is like a new twist going on. Okay.
I didn't know that. Wow.
And you're the one being the writer for those shows. They don't give you that rule?
He mentions a rule, that's it.
Oh. But at the end of every episode, there needs to be a hook. That's okay. Their rule.
Okay, there is also the 3 second rule on Douyin when you do like a short video, which is nonfiction. So 1 point each, but now we have question 3 and the last, and there should be only one winner because we're going to play Guess the Number. That is an exclusive question coming from Ting Ting article. What is the ratio of the budget used for distribution, meaning advertising? Usually, what's like the budget that they put on those?
Anaïs, 70%.
Okay, 70% in Beijing. Jack, how much do you say?
Man, 70% is good. 75%.
All right. Well, Jack, you win because it is usually around 80%, so you're the closest to it. Congratulations. You win the latest World of Chinese magazine.
Thank you.
You're welcome. On that
80%.
You're sitting next to it. You can just read it.
Okay. On that note, we'll wrap up the show. So glad to have you, dear guest. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Glad listeners to have you until the end. I guess you like that show. And if you do, you can help the Middle Earth podcast to grow by recommending us to your friends. Our 100th episode is around the corner, so stay tuned for a public event happening in Beijing that's going to be around mid-April. Let me remind you that the Middle Earth podcast, in case you guys have not paid attention, is part of TWOC, the World of Chinese Podcast Network. If you want to know more behind the headlines, go to theworldofchinese.com and order your latest copy. Also, if you are impressed by this show guest and need to find, an interviewee for your next documentary piece or use a researcher in China, you can give us a call. Today's episode was produced and edited by Aladdin Faré, co-written with Yang Ting Ting, and distributed by the World of Chinese Podcast Network. Hope to see you next time. Bye-bye. All right. So do you understand what I say, buzz in with your name?
Anaïs.
Yes, indeed. Anaïs. Okay, so let's do a tryout. Can you tell me what day of the month we are today?
Anaïs.
Yes.
March. Day of the month.
Yeah.
Yeah. 14.
Yes, indeed. Wow. No, it's funny. Every time I ask this STEM question, people always make mistakes. They always say...
the month of the day.
Yeah. Looks like our listener are still doing their dishes.
Yeah, or very committed to their workout.
Yeah, for sure.
So, since you're still here, if you want to learn more about Chinese society, culture, history, and language, you should go to theworldofchinese.com or find us on WeChat, and you'll find an amazing array of award-winning, in-depth, original reporting on China and amazing videos and podcasts too.
All right. Well, until the next issue then.